With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
From the Webby Awards, I'm David Michelle Davies. This is the Webby Podcast.
Minimalism? Post-minimalism? Thank you, Webbies.
Reality is
merely an illusion.
Art can set you free.
To a more colorful world.
Hey there, and welcome back to the Webby Podcast and our season finale. Yuri Suzuki is a fascinating person. He's a sound artist, designer, and electronic musician. He's one of those people who has a deep knowledge of both the philosophy and technology involved in sound art and design. A lot of his projects explore how sound impacts humans, like his famous Ototo machine that turns anything from a banana to a glass of water into a musical instrument. Recently, Yuri was named as the very first sound design partner at Pentagram, one of the world's foremost design shops. I had a fascinating talk with Yuri on design, how music technology has changed music itself over decades, some of his recent projects, including his revival of a Motown self-composing music machine, and his new work at Pentagram. We start out talking about some of his early memories of his father's music collection and MTV videos.
Basically, like, my dad was really big record collector, and he has got full of the like, record on the wall. And if I ask any music, he just pick up from like, his walls. Like, he's kind of incredible collector. And so, like, naturally, I'm into like music and sound, you know, activities after that.
And was that in you grew up in Japan?
Yeah, I grew up in Japan. Yeah, and also like my dad keep feeding me like some sort of like kind of culture came from US in a way. Like, you know, he gave me like a beta cassette tape of, you know, MTV, like including like Herbie Hancock Rocket, you know, that kind of music videos inspire me a lot. And also my grandma like, keeps showing me like, you know, Beatles animation and something like that. So it's kind of from the beginning, like they feed me so much like musical things.
Were they also, did they work in music also, or was it just something they were passionate about?
No, my dad is like working for publisher, but his passion is, you know, playing, you know, listening to music anyway. He never able to play any music anyway. But my grandma like used to play piano, but it's not really, you know, properly like trained or anything.
Sure.
So, but somehow like the selection of the, you know, like a video, and because I was growing up with a beta cassette tape and like video and like the television.
So that was probably like in the 80s or like early
90s? Yeah, really 80s. Yeah. Okay. So
80s in Japan.
80s in Japan.
And it's feeling. An exciting time. Right?
And also like, you know, like we kind of appreciate the kind of American, you know, pop culture and things. So I have got, luckily has got quite a lot of material to, you know, listening and watching as well. So.
Huh. Did he like a certain kind of music or everything? Or what was the type of music that when you were young, you were really into?
Yeah, he kind of listening to everything anyway, like, you know, standard rock music and jazz and the kind of electronic as well. Mm. And he wasn't a big fan of the metal or like goth music before, but, you know, he was really into like Slipknot, you know, a couple of, you know, kind of 10 years ago, he was really into Slipknot and also Marilyn Manson as well. He's kind of really open-minded guy, and he's really, you know, doesn't have any, you know, like wall to like listening music at all. So it's quite open, I think.
Interesting. And so, and you were listening when you were younger, growing up, like on like records and CDs or tapes?
Yeah, in the beginning was tape, I remember, because that's easy to handling it. And the record is really difficult to manipulate that. You know, some small child could scratch easily, so I'm not allowed to touch any record. And then after all, like, you know, CD came up, you know, when I was maybe 7 years old or 9 years old. I can't remember, but that was quite dramatic difference in the quality of sound.
You know,
suddenly, almost like I can misunderstand like some people like playing the music just behind the wall or something. Like that kind of quality came out. my main like media I used to listen is kind of like, first of all, a cassette tape and became CD. And after that kind of horrible media called MD, like mini
disc. Oh, yeah, I remember that. Right.
So that's like kind of like main things I used to listen. Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, I ask you about that because we'll talk about in a second here, but it seems like a lot of your projects have a playfulness to them and are experimenting around formats and input and, you know, how music is made. And it just a very sort of like playful quality to them. So that's what I'm sort of interested in, like when you were young, what, you know, sort of what you were inspired by when you were young, because it seems like it has, you correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like, you know, that there's a youth to your projects.
Yeah. One thing is like, I want to say like, you know, my parents or like my grandma's tried training like as piano, but I never able to play piano in my life because first of all, I couldn't really read any musical score. And then like later on, like I found out because the reason why I couldn't read musical score because I'm dyslexic actually. And my experience of learning music was quite painful. I never liked it because it's kind of forceful and you have to learn and practice, and I never liked it, you know. But same time, I have a kind of passion to, you know, when I see like some improvisation for the jazz and things, like, you know, seems like freedom in the kind of music, like without any musical score and so on. But still, like, need to know the kind of basic music theory and so on. And then something dramatic change coming to me for jobs of making music was electronic music. Like, I kind of gave up band. I actually like got fired from band because I couldn't do any musical score. And I decided to start making music myself with like a drum machine or synthesizer. And the literally doesn't need any knowledge. You just kind of, you know, put in some couple buttons and start, you can make playful music from there.
Right.
So that's kind of, you know, like changing point. I start enjoying like producing music and playing music. So I think it's really pretty much came from my difficulty to understanding practicing music. You know?
Did you, how about computers? Did you use computers a lot when you were young? Were machines and computers a part of your childhood and your youth?
Like at that time, still computer was quite expensive. And also like if you want to have like a recording inside a computer, like you need to have a really high spec computer.
So right.
That's costing a lot.
Yeah, it's not
so
like
in the end, like I just bought like, you know, Roland like drum machine or something, like, you know, recording into the cassette tape, like multi track recording. That's really pretty much initial starting. And I think my first kind of touch of the electronic music never involving computer.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. Well, I mean, so you have a project actually that's kind of pretty current, I think, that is about to be, I think, shown at the Barbican.
Yeah.
Essentially, you completed Raymond Scott's project.
Yeah.
Former big Motown executive. It was called Electronium. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like a self-composing music device. I've seen it described at. Can you explain, like, you know, what his vision for it was?
Yeah.
And for people who don't even know the background, and how did you complete it, and what is it now?
Yeah. So Raymond Scott is a really successful musician, like around 30s, 40s time. And he mainly like composing music for television or the commercial music a lot. And later on, I think Warner Brothers discovered his music. We can still listen to his music at Cartoon Network or something.
Mm.
And same time, he was really brilliant, like a self-taught like engineer as well. So he kind of like he's really came from like a jazz and a piano background, but he's really into the process for the composing music in the electronic way. So
he was like doing this sort of on the side in like a lab and all this, right? It wasn't like his main job. It was like sort of his side project.
In the beginning was side project. And he used to have like a studio called Manhattan Research in the New York and Manhattan. And he kind of slowly building like crazy electronics machines in there. And I think that investment quite successful, and so many companies asking him to creating electronic music for, you know, advertisement and things. Mm. And that time, I think he funding himself to building musical instruments called Electronium. So basically self-generative musical instruments he wanted to create. And after that, Mr. Barry Gordy from Motown, you know, visited his like studio, and he was so impressed about that idea. And I think he was appointed as like a Motown musical R&D or something.
Mm.
And I think like Raymond Scott spent $1 million like, you know, building Electronium in the Motown in Los Angeles.
What was it that he was trying to build exactly?
So basically like what, you know, as far as my understanding from like all like memo and the document, it's like center, it's divided into the three sections for that musical instruments. And the center part is like self, you know, you can actually programming it, your like rhythm and melody. And the left side is actually like kind of more about the performative side. You can quickly like reach to like some parameter and you can, you know, improvise like, you know, melody. Mm. And right side is really unique because it's influenced to like what you compose and kind of in the keep changing progression of the music, like making sort of like helping you to composing music, and that's something he wanted. So right part like seems extremely difficult because at that time there's no concept of the, like, you know, artificial intelligence exists, there's right. no algorithm exists, and he tried to sorting out kind of progression of the music by, you know, machine basically, mm. by mathematics or something.
Right.
Extremely complicated. So that was his vision. So basically he wanted creating a platform to working between human and kind of machine in a way. So the
idea is that there's like sort of a three panel machine yeah. and you could put in like a melody or something in the mm. middle, and that would then that would work with the right side that would sort of start building its
Absolutely.
Own
yeah.
its own version of that. And yeah. then you could like add little parts from the left side, essentially, mm-hmm. right? You can change the melody or add sounds, yeah. or that would sort of then integrate into
exactly
some artificial creation happening on yeah, the right yeah. side, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, because something you could expect what you compose in the like center part anyway, but the right part is really, you know, unexpected way to, you know, changing your music into yeah. going somewhere, and that's something he was looking for. You know, like you know. That kind of inspiration never happened by right. yourself. So
he had like the idea for it, but the technology behind the artificial part just wasn't there to actually finish it.
I think that time it's kind of mathematics, that automatic composition was quite popular as well. Mm-hmm. But for example, one instrument called Tridex, it has got first ever, like, you know, kind of self-generated musical instruments, but it exists at that time.
Okay.
But however,
and is that know, just it's just relying on like the yeah, chord progressions of math?
Exactly.
If you're in this one, then you'll go to this one, and then
exactly.
Right?
So I think I can say, because like I visited Mr. Mark Mazarzba from Devo, and
right.
he showed me his like, you know, warehouse basically, and he actually preserved original Electronium.
Oh wow!
You know, unfunctional condition.
Oh my gosh!
And
who did he get that from? He bought it.
So
like
basically, like, he told me like he visited Raymond Scott before, you know, just couple of like years before he died.
Oh, amazing!
But Raymond Scott himself is kind of lost conscious that time because he had a kind of quite a lot of like heart stroke or something he had. And he even doesn't have a conscience, and he cannot even talk, but kind of completely, like, you know, out of mind that time. And then he visited the warehouse. He actually found, like, you know, Electronium itself, and he found it, and wow, like, this is amazing.
Wow.
And after like Raymond Scott died, I think his wife is sort of kind of tried to get rid of, like, you know, inside of the kind of warehouse. And then Mark visited again, and like, he just decided to preserve all like his achievement into, you know, his, you know.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, so that's how he, you know.
Yeah. So you picked up so you had this goal of mm-hmm. taking this concept and sort of mm-hmm. project that he had started but not finished.
Yeah.
And I guess now you have some stuff from Mark Mothersbaugh and
yeah.
there's some drawings and stuff. And then,
yeah.
and so what was your goal with it?
Yeah, so in the beginning was like really, because that's kind of long time dream, like so many musicians talking about mystery of the Electronium. So
okay.
first of all, like I want to be like finished in a way. And I thought like now it's perfect timing because such a thing, you know, like artificial intelligence or like, kind of, you know, machine learning, it's really, we can handle it by ourselves. Like it used to be quite difficult, and even like my level cannot do anything about,
hmm.
you know, artificial intelligence, like algorithm or like anything. That's
right.
extremely difficult things. But now, like such as Google has got Magenta platform, like everyone can use it.
For hmm? People who don't know about Magenta, hmm. can you explain that a little bit? Or?
So Magenta is sort of like kind of algorithm platform, and it's sort of self-generative. And if you put in some information, something like information deflecting it, it's sort of like part of machine learning. Like they have a sort of archive of the kind of bunch of like running data inside. And if you access that, some feedback is coming in.
Mm.
So basically, like it's based on the database and more about the machine learning database. I think this is really perfect for, you know, music composition and things. Like, you know, such as they try to make kind of self-generated melody kind of a progression or something.
Right.
So we team up with like guys called Counterpoint, and they're brilliant like AI consultancy company, and they actually make a perfect connection between like algorithm and this project. Mm. So this kind of drive me to think about, because now we can actually like realizing his dream because we have got enough resources around us.
Right.
Yeah. So that's why.
Essentially using this like database of machine learning, like learnings or training from Google Magenta and this other partner to work on this right side of the Electronium.
Yeah. And in the beginning, my, main thought is actually like we want to like creating sort of like algorithms based on like how Raymond Scott, compose the music. But that was extremely complicated, so we kind of gave up that part. But in the future, like I'd love to update as well, based on how he composing music. If anything like you compose like sounds like influence coming from Raymond Scott himself, that can be a really, really nice project. But this time we couldn't do it.
I mean, and what type of, do you know what type of music the Magenta is trained on? You know what I mean? Like what's
Because that's quite difficult to tell because this sort of mass data, there's no particular composition is coming from Magenta. So it's pretty much
just lots and lots of music input. That
but I think best way to demonstrate, machine learning, it's always about, same composers, kind of, same behavior and how, composing new music. For example, Mozart or Bach, how they're going to make music now. So that's, demonstration is perfect for machine learning.
Interesting.
But Magenta doesn't have, that perspective at the moment. And if you have got enough time and the budget, probably we can do it. But at the moment, in my level, I cannot finish, that's too ambitious, I think.
So what is it? What does it sound like, the Electronium, and the one that you've worked on now? And how does it work? And like, what's the experience like for people?
Yeah, it's really interesting because even like, if I have a really random, melody progression in there, like suddenly, really like deep like bass is coming out, and it's no repetition, like always kind of progression is happening. So it's like kind of similar music, but keep changing like music in the defined level. So it's really interesting thing. It's we put kind of a parameter called Counterpoint, so which is quite significant, most signature Raymond Scott technique, like suddenly glides, rhythm is changing and so on, like really, really unstable music, I would say. Like there's no particular tempo, always tempo is changing and so on. So that's represented Counterpoint. So I do believe like, output sort of like similar to like Raymond Scott.
Right.
Because we put his technique anyway. But I just like sent over like, one sound link to Raymond Scott family, and they say, sounds not like Raymond Scott as well. but this is kind of have to understanding as this is sort of tools, like depend on the people and the timing.
Yeah.
Like music, could be changing it.
Right. So, he didn't make it to make music that sounded like him. He made it to make something different that would make its own music. I think so.
And then there's a couple of demo tape left from like an original Electronium, but... some of them is sort of like, maybe this is not good word, sort of faking it, like sounds like a functional thing. But because some, like song is actually like reversed or existing song he composed. So that's quite interesting what's truth or not. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
That's an interesting question. Machines have always played, not always, but for a while have played like a big role in music. Mostly in helping make music or amplifying it or maybe sequencing and automating it or... Yeah. Editing, there's all this editing software, but it hasn't played as big a role in composing the music, right? Mm-hmm. It's always been the human because of composing and the technology, is like the assistant or the amplifier. Now that machines can start playing a role in making music, does it change the way you think about our relationship with machines?
I think Raymond Scott's original plan for Electronium is really purely for really inspiration. Like human, like rather than like making decision for the whole composition of the music, I think. And then our version of the Electronium is quite similar. Like just like chord progression is happening. Sometimes a really interesting melody coming in, but it's disappear in a couple of like minutes after. So I think still even like Google doing quite a lot of experiments with the composing music and so on. But at the moment, it's really about criterion of the, you know, nice music based on, like, you know, human mind or like human brain.
Right.
And some people like it, some people not anyway. So it's still quite difficult to make a really beautiful, you know, like a decision made by, like, you know, AI to make a perfect music.
Right.
It's always like human being have to, like, you know, rearrange or like make it better and then adjust into something like we like it, I think. So I think it's going to be take time.
Yeah.
And,
so it's almost like a tool. It's almost like more of a tool for exploring all the music that could exist and taking you in places that you hadn't thought of, but you still, it's still not the beginning, the middle, the end, and editing it and perfecting it. And
I think still like AI, it's really just for tools to helping like a human being, I think, to inspiration or like making a couple of decisions. But I think final decision, the criterion is really like have to belong to like human, I think.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I think it just doesn't make sense, you know.
Right.
And there's a couple of attempts to making sort of algorithm-based music, but just sounds like beautiful ambient music, but it's nothing really significant for, you know.
Yeah.
As a pop music or like as a music, I think.
I mean, it's really obvious to say that music plays like a really big role in culture. Mm. You know, it's from everything from like, you know, celebrating our rituals and our birthdays and all that kind of stuff. Do you feel like music has changed a lot, you know, in the last 20 or 30 years? Like, not obviously the songs have changed, but I mean, like that there's been some sort of, you know, structural change in the of what music is or what music is in culture after as machines have started becoming a bigger part of how it gets made?
In the music, like revolution of the sort of like, you know, music development, like sometimes based on tech, you know, technology as well, and starting for like recording and also like new electronics music instruments such as synthesizer coming in.
Right.
And also like sampler and how to disc recording. And there's so much like footstep we have. Kind of each time like a new technology was introduced, sort of paradigm shift is happening, like drastically like changing things. But this 20 years or 30 years, maybe this 20 years after hard disk recording was born, there's not so much like dramatic developments happening. And I can say like music itself doesn't really change much. Mm. And even urban music as well, like because when I moved to like London, and that was kind of 14, like more 16 years ago. And the dubstep was really like kind of popular. And that was actually came from culture in London, like such as like Beatles hip hop, but meet with kind of dub from Jamaica and the melody coming from like Middle East, like producer making Middle Eastern like melody line. And the Chinese like, you know, singer like singing on top. So that kind of multicultural making like a completely new music and quite original. And but however, I think this 16 years like doesn't have so much development.
Interesting.
You know, dubstep exists, but it imported like US and became really like a different perspective and developed quite a lot in here as well. But there's no like a completely new music hasn't been born yet, I think.
It's almost just the the technology that's brought all the different people and cultures together to learn from each other. It's made something, but it's not entirely different than what was there.
Yeah, and also like quite unique about how people like handling it and make, you know, creating new music, like such as like I'm not sure you know like genre called vaporwave.
Uh-huh.
Like you know that came from absolutely like kind of they probably like producing with cassette tape or something like a lo-fi. Kind of with all the disco, but like half speed and, you know, beat on top. That's quite interesting culture, you know, depend on the what they have. But unfortunately, not much happening like this. I think 10 years, not much happening, isn't it?
Do you think the introduction of algorithms into the music making is going to potentially open up for a bigger step change, or is it?
Yeah, it could be. And some, you know, producer, because the like, problem is like now, you know, access to algorithm is kind of still like need a lot of engineering knowledge and things. But if it's much more easy, such as like Magenta introduced some plugin for Ableton Live. And basically, this is, many producers are using that software, just dragging and drop, and you can actually can use algorithms. That's probably like inspiring people to do something.
Right.
So I think the hope is like, you know, that kind of, you know, new technical development, like giving people to have like a new way to, you know, imagine music.
Tell me about, you have another project that is called Ototo.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, that was like when I was a child, like I'm really into like some interactive project as well. Like, you know, even I'm really bad at mathematics and I'm really horrible about, you know, physical computing as well. So when I was a child, basically I keep breaking things. It's horrible and I never learn. But that time, like I really want to do like something kind of dream, you know, musical instruments and so on. I want to create, but without any knowledge. So that's kind of starting point. And then because like this is kind of programming, like people can program as well, but it's nothing like based on human language, isn't it? Like it's more about based on how computer, right? You know,
tell like, people how it works.
Yeah. So basically like, there's two way for the programming. Programming one way is kind of put in sequence. Like for example, you can have like this learn and this is sort of like a specific behavior and so on, like coming back as a loop and, you know, same like behavior happening again. But this is like not the way to, you know, how humans think. I think that's kind of sequence way to, you know, think about programming. Yeah. Another way is called kind of more of visualizing. So you just connect object and tie it together to make, you know, programming happen. You know, like machine like should be like adjusting to the human language in the way and much more easier to access. And same as physical computing as well, like building electronic circuit and so on. Like you need a number of components and it's really difficult to understand in the, you know, translating the real world, you know. So Auto2 is like really like easy platform. Like you just plug in something and, you know, push buttons and you can use anything. Like you don't have to program anything and so you don't have to plug any speaker or anything. So just straightforward.
So basically you have these little electrical...
Yeah, like has got kind of 12 parts in there and you can connect with crocodile clips or whatever.
Right.
And just connect with any conductive object and you just like switch on and off and then your conductive object sort of trigger to playing sound. So that's really simple.
Right. So
no,
you can hook it up to a vegetable or a glass or a table something that conducts electricity.
Yeah.
And then what? And then how do you choose what sound comes out? So the idea is you could hook up the clamp to a glass and a table, and then when you tapped on the glass, it would make that sound, and we tapped on the table to make a different sound. How do you determine what sound it makes?
Depend on the, because it's going to be like, it looks like piano keys. So depend on the, which key you connect it.
Got it.
It's, but we have a couple of like sensor input as well. So depend on how bright in the environment, how much like, you know, pressure you give, and the, you know, sound is keep changing as well. So yeah, it was kind of like I wanted to have a, you know, sort of platform and anyone can use it.
When you were making it, what were you hoping it would unlock for people? And then after it was done and you saw how people used it, was that what you had hoped or was there something different about it? Or
yeah, in the beginning it was quite personal anyways. That's something too, so I wanted to have myself. But after that, kind of made a company and made a Kickstarter campaign and quite a lot of people backed that project. And we produced, in total, maybe like we produced 5,000 to 6,000and put in the market as well. And so it was quite a nice journey because really personal thought and became quite mass. And is even like 6,000 probably is not much, but quite mass production to compare with what I have worked before.
Right. Yeah, that's a lot.
And then, you know, it's accidentally find a YouTube link, some people making creation based on the Auto2. Oh, that's quite amazing.
That's
and,
cool.
Completely different way to they think, like usage as well. So, yeah, that was kind of really fast point. I'm really interested in mass production, like pieces.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Right. Interesting. I mean, one thing I was thinking about it when I was looking at it was just that it gives people like this new entrance into making music. You know, I think everybody has this sort of idea of where you make music. It's on like a keyboard or on software. And now suddenly it's in this like physical thing, which feels, you know, not old in a bad way, like dated, but feels like a more analog or a more physical way, or just feels very different. And that was really interesting to me. And then I was also thinking about, so that's engaging people with making it in a different way. But at the same time, what's happening is that we are all like disengaging from how we choose what to listen to. You know, like now we're using all these algorithms to decide what we're going to listen to. Right. And like, it just seems like an interesting, what do you think the result is if we start living in a world where we're just like a lot less active in choosing what music we listen to, right? If machines are choosing for us.
Yeah, that's quite tricky, isn't it? Because like now, like we used to, like, you know, because I believe majority of people are still using iTunes, and it's always shuffle, and sometimes, like, you know, kind of things happening. But because I'm talking about a bit more like artist perspectives, a musician creating like album always have got to track 1 to track 12 has got sort of story and timeline there. But now we totally break up, and this each kind of thing is happening. And the decisions coming from, you know, like algorithm is sometimes really accurate, something you want as well. But sometimes, like, you know, doesn't really fit as well. So I don't know. I think sometimes, you know, selection is also like, you know, creation as well. So really shame to missing that part, I think. Because that's how DJ function, isn't it? Like always choosing right music in the right timing.
Right.
And they're always thinking for timeline how people feel. So I think that's like one of the really nice creation we can do. So we shouldn't really throw away that part. I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because you say your father was like a big collector. And, you know, at that time, there's just like when you listen to something, there's so much like decision that goes in. You know, you choose the tape or the album, but then the people that made that chose the order of those things. And now it's like you just put on the algorithm.
Yeah.
So it's choosing, and then you're not even getting the selection of the artist's order at all. So all that is like gone. Yeah. But you are finding, you do sometimes get things selected for you that you've never heard of and are like, you're like, this is amazing. Yeah, and you find things. So that's cool.
Yeah, that's true. Because I think like for me, it's like something missing for me. It's like, because I don't have like any account for Spotify or, you know, Apple Music at all. Like, I only listen like in music collection from hard drive.
Oh, wow.
But that's problem is like I'm start not discovering like new music. That's really problem. I think I need moment to, you know, find it. That's probably a moment that I used to go to record shop and finding like new music, but now no time to go to record shops. That's probably like maybe algorithm or like, you know, automatic selection gonna tell me like, you know, something really amazing music I should listen. So maybe
So why don't you use those services?
I don't know. Like problem is kind of I'm not believing sort of crowd, you know, storage kind of things because there's no guarantee. I feel like I'm not like I've got ownership of any music. So I'm probably quite the old, you know, way of thinking. Like always MP3, like even like MP3 is not good media, but they put in the hard drive and I can access anytime if I want.
Interesting.
Yeah. So yeah, because I'm kind of person like kind of collecting music and so on. So I need to have feeling like I have something.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think about some of those services that have been really focused on trying to make the media better? You know, I think Tidal, for a while had like bigger files available. Neil Young, I don't know if you know, he has like this archive where all of his music is on the web in this archive, and it's all in these like really, really rich files. None of it is in MP3.
Yeah.
Do you think is that important, that kind of stuff? How bad is the, you know, the reduction in the file to sort of like the overall art of music?
But like, yeah, my opinion is it used to be like such a cassette tape or like record is actually not really good sound at all. Like, you know, to think about quality is quite low.
Right.
So that's why like people used to have like amazing stereo system to have like a much better sound as possible. But now it's quite opposite, isn't it? Because MP3 is actually quality in there, like, you know, actually quite good sound to compare with like tapes and
right,
so
interesting.
On. Yeah, but you know, like it's still like, you know, warm like feeling of the cassette tape is great, but the MP3 is kind of, you know, everyone said like this is much better sound than, you know, cassette tape. But now like the problem is like people play back with any, you know, people never have like any proper hi-fi system these days. Like just right. have got speaker from computers or speaker from like iPhone or like have got sort of like a cheap Bluetooth speaker. That's
right.
how people are listening now.
Yeah.
So that's quite interesting because it's quite opposite, isn't it? It used to be like MIDI is horrible sound, but the you know, playback system is really good sound. Now it's MIDI is really good quality, but the playback system is pretty
yeah.
horrible. So yeah, that's quite an interesting argument. And but still, like, think, yeah, I don't know. I feel like I prefer to listening on the record and this cassette tape, but needless to say, you know.
You can't carry it around with you.
Yeah, yeah.
So tell me, you have a new role at Pentagram, or it's new-ish mm-hmm. now. Tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, that was quite interesting. Like, firstly, I got, you know, someone, you know, from Pentagram contacted me, like you know, do you want to join Pentagram or not? And I feel like Pentagon is one of the far from me in a way because I'm doing more about boundary between art and design. And I know like Pentagon, the reputation of the Pentagon past 20 years more about, you know, branding, you know, like agency, like rather than like making sound or product design. But I think, you know, I can see like they want to have like more update and also like, you know, possibility to changing as well. And they were looking for like, you know, really open-minded company.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate their openness and also quite amazing partners. You know, I respect for a long time. It's based in the Pentagram as well. So I thought it quite nice to try in
yeah.
the beginning. And also like a really long time, my dream is to think about, you know, what kind of, how sound affect the human like being in a way.
Right.
And I thought like doing a lot of like sound design research for a long time, and I can carry on like sound design. And hopefully like, that sound design studies became, you know, more of what we can do consultancy based on that for like many companies.
Right.
So I think really about a great, you know, transition and also thinking about deeper into myself, like what I can do in the world.
And you're the first sound design partner there, I think, right?
Yeah.
And so what does a sound design partner do? Are you focused mostly on, you said 50% is still art projects. What's the other 50%? Is it designing sound experiences for clients?
Yeah, like it's not only composition or anything. Uh-huh. Like we do like much like, you know, sculpture, 3D background, but based on the, you know, sound-based communication in the way, like
okay.
what's the best way to communication? And also another kind of, you know, design for exhibitions as well, like how we can effectively using it. My practice is not only sound anyway, but in doing 3D aspect or like interactive aspect. Probably like my majority part, I'm spending experiential part, you know, experiential design in the way. And using quite a lot of sound as well, but as well as kind of, you know, visual aspect as well.
I read somewhere that, I don't know if this is you tell me, I read somewhere that your first brief at Pentagram was to design a new, like, waiting tone for the phones.
yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, that was, yeah, it came from Central Chin because some, like, you know, waiting hold tone is just repetitive. Like, you know, I think 3 second sound music again and again.
So this is like when people call on the phone and they put on hold and then they have to, like, wait.
Yeah, and the most common one, probably Cisco, like, making quite, you know, do you know that one? Like,
no.
Bam, but like, really, like, fusion kind of music.
Okay.
But just same music repeating again and again and again. And they asked me, like, can you, like, redesign, like, basically, like, you know, holding
right.
tone.
So how did you approach that?
So then, like, I actually, like, thinking about AI first, because Brian Eno, like, he made an amazing software about creating ambient music based on AI. I think a really important part for, like, sound design, like, it shouldn't have, like, a reputation, because once people notice reputation again and again and again, people are really annoying about it, stress about it.
Right.
So my first brief tried to making sort of music has a sort of progression all time, every second. And
so you don't ever really hear it again, the same thing.
So that's what's kind of first thought. And the development of electronium actually quite helps in the end, because that's what's exactly what I'm looking for. So based on the Electronium like software we created, you know, like link, you know, so like holding tone in the end.
Oh, interesting. So how would you describe, is it describable, the music of a, like a genre, or is it just changing so frequently that
it's kind of like melody in there, like quite a lot of reverb as well, but it doesn't have so much middle frequency because phone has got some middle frequency a lot. Like we shouldn't emphasize that side.
Mm.
And basically music for like, we just like made like 1 hour, 2 hour music and without any repetition. So if you're listening it, just keep music changing it. And so if you call to like Pentagram office in London, like it's already installed. So, but in the usual Pentagram office, like London, it's like doesn't have so much holding time. So maybe you can maybe hear for like only like 5 seconds or something.
Yeah.
But in case you have to like call like a longer time.
It's interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's funny, a lot of places like try and make their own hold music, but it's always like a jingle or something. Like there's these conference call services, you know, where it's like the same jingle, and then you've been on the phone 2 times, and it's the most annoying thing ever.
And also, like especially, like, you're gonna have stressful phone calls to complain to the internet connection, or like especially me, it's quite annoying. It's I have a really big problem for my passport stolen in France, and I had to issue new visa from like the UK government. And each time calling them, like they kind of wait for me for like at least like sometimes 1 hour.
Oh wow!
That's like,
and then there's a send the music.
Yeah, it's like again, because that's what's kind of like, they just can't stand it anymore. But so I think like you know, like reason to call is sometimes stressful already anyway. But it's not good things to have reputation.
One time we interviewed Paola Antonelli, you know, who's like the curator at MoMA.
Yeah.
And she's done some really cool things like bring in things into the permanent collection, like Pac-Man or the at sign that people were sort of, you know, like thought that was silly or didn't make sense. But really, I think opened up the way they think about what they collect and what are objects and stuff. You know, you could say the same thing with what you do, that there's like the idea that like of sound design is even relatively, you know, this that's design is, you know, it's not next last year, but it's still relatively new. Why do you think it's important to think of what you do or what others do as design?
As like sound design?
Yeah.
I think
like as a field in design, because I think most people still, even though they're sound design, they still think of design as
for
visual and things like
that. Yeah. I think, because people have those 5 senses, isn't it? Like one is kind of this, and like sight, and also smell, and also like taste, and touch, and hearing. Yeah. And then, you know, like sight is already like graphic design, visual design has been really developed for a long, long time. And secondly, you know, haptics design is happening. So, you know, like touch and things, like it's really developed for the past 2 decades. Like so much people like doing haptics design now. And in fact, if you touch on the phone or something, you have like some tiny feedback is coming and you feel like push the button or something.
Yeah.
That's really beautiful design. And food design quite popular, like a smell and like taste, like has been really popular for, you know, like many, many years now. But the sound part is really abstract. Like, you know, there's no definition and not so much exhibition is happening as well. Because I know the reason, because it's quite hard to understand because it's so abstract and quite psychological. And also really like affected the humans, like, you know, emotion a lot. So it's really difficult scientific proof, you know, this is right or not.
Right.
And that's why I think people like tend to be like not touch much. But for me, it's kind of, you know, I did so much, you know, sound study for a long time. So I feel like I could conclude something, like, you know, in the study now. And then in a way, like something curious about me is like most of the IoT products at the moment, like such as, you know, communication with Alexa and so on, like it's purely for audio communication, isn't it? Like just talking to that and, you know, embedding to your computer or like, you know, AI or whatever, you know, coming back with audible information to inform you. So, and also like now, like so many people are avoiding text these days, isn't it? More about talking to that and sending over instead of texting it. Because people know like this is a much quicker communication method.
Right.
And also like losing physicality as well, because now, you know, such as car, like they became like instead of engine, like they have a motor in the electronics. So that's much, much like quiet in the car. So used to have, you know, physicality attached to the car, but now it's completely missing. So we had to redesign new kind of identity of the car now. So like there's so much space.
Because it used to be so loud in there.
Yeah, so loud. Quiet, and right? Then, yeah. But that's kind of good notification as well, because car is coming, and also like if you like turn left or something, always the kind of chick sound is coming out as well. So we really have to redesign and think about, you know, what kind of, you know, sound could attach to our daily life. Because now everything became quieter and quieter now. So we need to think about soundscape from scratch in a way.
And not just like trying to like make the fake car sound, like, right? You don't want to just take like, the car sound and like make it fake so that it feels like you're in a car or whatever.
Yeah, like that's probably maybe quickest way now. But I think we should like, think about another, because I don't think like a motor sound itself is not pleasant sound neither. So we have to balance between notice but something pleasant sound as well. Yeah. And so that's kind of drive me to think about sound design, because now really like people like realizing importance of sound, you know.
Yeah. Has there been a lot of research done on the way different sounds make people feel? And is there a lot of data now where you can say, I'm going to design it this way because I know that these low frequency sounds based on these studies, or is it still like based on observation?
I think like there's a couple of like, you know, academic papers issued, like, you know, already in the sound study and psychological connection and so on. And some, you know, for example, like I think like one organization about like safetiness of the car or something in England, they like listed up number of songs that you shouldn't listen like during driving, like, you know, makes you aggressive or something. So, I think definitely I have to like, you know, collaborate more with kind of, you know, psychological research as well. Like it's all about, you know, how people feel, like rather than obvious like reasons. And then I know a couple of companies, they're already doing a lot of sound design as well. And then, that's a company called Man Made Music, like based in like New York, they do a lot for the sound design as well. Uh-huh. But still new, and there's still a lot of space to think about.
You know, there's so much change happening. What excites you about the interplay of sound design and humanity and culture based on all this new stuff happening in the world? You know, what's the thing that you're excited about and that you see in the future that you sort of are optimistic about?
I think definitely like it's incredible opportunities to think about, you know, how, you know, soundscape should be changed anyway. And this is nothing about you know, like each product, it's all about everything like surrounding us, like such as maybe like sound of the computer sound or like sound of the maybe like speaker sound quality as well. I feel like this is really infinity possibility, and we can like design so many things. So that's really excite me a lot. And also maybe like hopefully like, that's really bring to more of the proper consultancy business as well. So that's really excited me a lot. And also like I'm highly excited about somehow conclude like what sound design about. That's something I really want to try for a long time. And in fact, this in London, like there's two courses, like sound design course in Royal College Bath and London College of Communication. They have a sort of sound design course as well. But the problem is they haven't really concluded what sound design about. So it's nice to have sort of like, you know, sort of definition or like sort of bone, like what should we have to do. I think that's something I'm gonna really excited about.
That's cool. Is there other areas that like you think really need more sound design and more attention, and that really could make a difference in people's lives?
Yeah, something like related to the Pentagram, because Pentagram does quite a lot of sound identity for the company and the things. And but again, like human brain itself, like doesn't want to have a reputation. It's quite difficult, isn't it? Sort of branding like need to have representation, something key element, and have to repeat again to understanding people. But same time, it's visual side of people repeating, that's fine. But if sound is more sensitive, if you're listening same like sound identity, just kind of I can't really take anymore in a way. So I think something I'm thinking now is like sound identity, like working with other partner, try to think about sort of the way kind of like we can keep iconic melody, but it's keep progressing it, you know, depend on the, you know, like, you know, certain time, like going to be changed, but still you can recognizable, like it's sort of philosophy behind the company.
Right.
So that's really excite me a lot at the moment. That's probably like a nice tool to using AI to progress. Something great about you know, AI is actually, like, if you kind of teaching it kind of specific pattern, it's kind of infinity to creating quite similar music, but no repetition in a way. So I think that could be quite interesting possibility, and that's something I'm going to try as well.
So it's like it's kind of iterative sound design. Or, you know, I think that it reminds me of Pentagram had this kind of famous branding project here in New York a few years ago, probably longer now, 5 or 10 years ago, for Saks Fifth Avenue, which is like this big department store. And they wanted to redo their identity, but they wanted to do it in a way where it didn't like look the same all the time. But you, when you saw it, you knew it was. And so, you know, they made this big visual identity and then they divided it up into like a grid of squares and then the grid of squares can like appear anywhere in any order and that's what the thing is, but so it always looks a little different,
but something recognizable,
but it's like you just have the feeling for what it is, right?
I think that's really clever. It's actually Michael Beirut did it, that brand identity, and that's probably kind of quite similar method anyway. But something we have to careful about sound is humans' ears are really, really kind of sensitive about sound, like, rather than visual, you know, because I think smelling and also hearing is sort of like much closer to brain sense, I think. So I think people more sensitive and people complain about things.
Yuri, thanks for joining us on the Webby Podcast. It's been great to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to Yuri for stopping by the studio. Yuri has a ton of projects you should check out, from the electronic project to Ototo. Visit his website, yurisuzuki.com, yurisuzuki.com, and follow him at Yuri Suzuki on Twitter. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a few minutes to leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. For more information about the Webby Awards, visit www.webbyawards.com. That's WEBBY awards.com, or on most social platforms at The Webby Awards. As always, you can reach me on social at DMDLikes. That's a wrap for this season. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in the fall with more great guests and stories about the internet. Our producer is Terrence Brosnan. Our writer is Jordana Jarrett. Our editorial director is Nicole Ferraro. Music is Poddington Bear. Claire Graves is that lucky person next to you on the plane who naps the whole flight. I'm your host, David Michelle Davies, and this is the Webby Podcast.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.